Welcome to G&D Spotlight, the podcast where we shine a light on the ever-evolving world of security tech. I'm Jessica Antonacci, marketing for US Paytech, and today we are kicking off the start of a special series of live podcast episodes recorded at G&D headquarters in Munich, Germany, during the Blockchain Thinkers event. We are joined by our moderator, Yip Ta, CEO and founder of JCD.AI Labs, and our panelists, Dennis Winter, CTO and MD at the Borsch Stuttgart Digital, Max Imbiel, CISO and founder at Ahead Security and previously Bitpanda, and Dr. Uwe Stegemann, co-founder of Moray Digital Assets and Market Analytics. Today's topic is titled Scandemic, Combating Social Engineered Crypto Fraud with Innovation and Collaboration. I'll now hand it over to Yip.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm extremely happy to welcome you to our panel on Scandemic and Combating Social Fraud or Social Engineering-Based Crypto Fraud. My name is Yip. I'm based here in Munich, and I have with me a very competent and most distinguished panel participation here. You've already heard from Dr. Uwe Stegemann. He's, in my view, one of the visionaries of our industry. He already said, let's look at blockchain a bit more holistically. And we're going to dive deep into that in a second. Then I have next to me wonderful CTO of Börse Stuttgart Digitalgruppe, Dennis Winter. He's been for the past years putting together the excellence behind all crypto-related topics at the sixth largest trading group of Europe. And then finally, we have Max Imbiel, who as a CISO was responsible for the security and user friendliness of one of our most popular digital assets exchanges in Europe, Bitpanda. And now he's like an entrepreneur and bringing together all the past experiences together to help our industry grow to the next level. So we already just heard that our blockchain industry shall not be looked at narrowly. Maybe, I don't know, just by show of hands, who this morning looked into the prices, the coin market cap, and felt a bit like, oh, we were, not too long ago, we were like a 3 trillion euro market, and now today this was 2.4 trillion USD when I checked. But I think the purpose of this panel is not to discuss, you know, whether we will see blockchain, because we already heard blockchain is here to stay, but actually how to drive the adoption. And Uwe has already mentioned, you know, there will be 10, 15 different drivers to think of this 2 trillion USD market to bring it to 20 or $200 trillion markets. And I would love to hear more about, number one, the drivers that you're seeing that we are needed to have in place so that this S-curve can take off. And secondly, also how the on-chain analytics or the newness of the methodologies that you and your company are solving are going to drive this?
Yeah, it's a good question. Let me maybe start by comparing what I see in the blockchain space to what I see in the mainstream, traditional, maybe even regulated industry space. Let's maybe start with the perspective of the individual. If I'm an individual and I invest into Bitcoin, that's today relatively easy, or into other coins. It's my own money. I have a wallet. I go to Bitpanda. It's relatively easy. I can do it and I can take that decision. Now, if I'm the CEO of a 100,000 employee company, that decision-making process looks very, very different. So it's not only that I'm risk averse as a human. Yeah, we all are risk averse, more or less. Yeah, but we all are. It's life-saving. In a company, there is something like regulatory compliance, and there's something like personal liability if something goes wrong. So the decision-making process is very different. So if I'm the CEO of a company and someone tells me about the beauty of blockchain, all the terrific advantages, my question is less about, as I tried to say earlier, less about a few basis points of efficiency. Maybe it's even less about, hey, there is a business opportunity, tokenization, which I could not grasp if I don't embark on the blockchain. My question is, what can go wrong? And if of these 100,000 people, 98,000 don't really know anything about it, don't really know how to operate it. If I ask my CISO, do we have the policies in place to do this? And my CISO said, I've never looked at that before. We have 250,000 pages of policies, but none of them is focused on blockchain business model. So the decision-making logic is very different, right? In the mainstream, specifically regulated financial industries. That's what I'm saying. There need to be a lot more ingredients in, you know, being put into the pot in order to, yeah, joyfully eat the blockchain soup. I think what needs to happen is, and I'm comparing that to a pendulum. Look at the old mainstream industries. If I talk to my clients in the past, and I said, okay, here's a great business opportunity. Why aren't you going after it? A lot of them said, it's the tech. Yeah, my tech is not scalable. My tech is not performing enough. My tech doesn't provide me the functionality, etc. Now, you could argue with blockchain, that's gone. Yeah, there is a tech that is performing and it has certain advantages, but all the rest of it is missing, right? So in the old tech mainstream industries, you have an organization, a governance, yeah, that is geared towards the operating model as we have it right now. You have the policies that are geared towards supporting an operating model that we have right now. For blockchain, that's completely new. So if I'm the CEO of a big company, I think about 100 or 150 items that are open and unresolved in order to finally take a decision in favor of blockchain, despite all the benefits. So that pendulum, yeah, is, yeah, in the mainstream industries, that pendulum is all the way to the left. Yeah, no tech, but all the rest, all the policies and processes. In blockchain, my feeling is we are somewhere on the right. We have a tech, but we don't have all the rest of it. So as we all know, the truth, you know, probably lies somewhere in the middle. That's why I'm arguing for moving the focus a little bit away from the tech in these conferences towards the other things that are necessary to really enable blockchain to prove the value it promises. Yeah, in settings that, you know, are, that provide scalable business opportunities.
Yes. Would you want to share with us how that works thanks to the on-chain analytics, for example, that are available now these days?
Well, as some of you know, I started my journey when I left McKinsey, the idea of creating a euro stablecoin for the mainstream financial services industry, not to buy crypto, but to support, you know, digital settlements of securities transactions. So that was the original idea. What we wanted to make sure is that, you know, the stablecoins remain in those areas of the business and the ecosystem that we felt were, yeah, geared towards our use case and not somewhere, yeah, in the criminal shady areas. So we developed an analytics system with a team, you know, coming from complex systems physics. Yeah, pretty interesting. And what they said is, if we develop something new, we need to tailor it to blockchain. So use all the benefits that blockchain provides in order to come up with an analytics system that analyzes blockchain. Well, that sounded pretty reasonable to me, but I learned lots of other analytics systems still use old methodological approaches to analyze a new ecosystem. We try to redefine the approach to the blockchain ecosystem, i.e. using all on-chain data. And I think that the main breakthrough was we moved away from traditional historical statistical time series analysis, which is 99% of what the traditional banks today do, right? In the risk departments, in the investment banking departments, in the asset management, they are not trying to predict the markets. They all say we cannot predict the markets, but they say, okay, we put a little bit of analytical rigor around this by looking at what happened in the past. We're saying, well, for blockchain, there is no real past, at least not a reliable past, right? So that's why we, for instance, moved towards an approach that is similar to what Google Maps does. Yeah, Google Maps, you're probably all going home for Easter Monday to your families to have afternoon coffee. In the past 20 years, there's always been a traffic jam on Easter Monday, yeah, because everyone was going back to afternoon coffee. Google Maps is completely moving into a different direction. They're saying, I don't care what happened a year ago. I'm looking at who is sitting in the car right now. What is he punching into his navigation system? Yeah. At which speed is he going? Yeah. And then I can calculate when is he arriving in Frankfurt. And if 250,000 cars are are getting there at the same time, well, then they can predict a traffic jam. And that's exactly what we do as well, right? We're looking not on at historical time series now, as we're trying to identify and decipher the current market dynamics. And we've developed it, frankly, for risk management purposes in the early days. But surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, we're receiving a lot of inquiries currently from the crypto hedge funds. They're saying, well, if you can predict the market with higher reliability, that's terrific, yeah, for our investment and trading activities. But hey, that came as a surprise. But what I'm trying to say is, if you want to embark on that journey, my proposition would be use the benefits of that new technology and apply the operating model of that new ecosystem to your analytics. And then you can provide analytics that are really insightful, which in my view helps then, yeah, in mass adoption, because people want to know what they're getting themselves into. And that's what analytics is helpful for.
This is new mindset or theory-based application of the data on the data that is available for free in real time and then combined into a dashboard to make better decisions. I'm actually curious, Max, you're the cyber guardian. You've protected the systems of the old world and also then of the new world. What is actually the difference? Because social engineered fraud has been an issue, not only in Web3. A lot of people think it's crypto related, but actually it's not. But what actually makes the new kind of attack vectors more relevant?
So I think what we can definitely see now within the blockchain environment or the crypto environment is that the social engineering approaches that we have seen already in the past in finance and in banking is now being adopted widely on the crypto space as well. So customers are getting targeted directly, which is, let's say, the big spread of attackers, that because that is the easiest target, right? The human, I don't like saying the human is the weakest link, because I think the human is actually the strongest link in all of that if trained right. But if you are already susceptible to social engineering, right, then you are now being targeted more specifically at social engineering attacks targeting your crypto that you own. And we've seen this just a couple of weeks ago as well with the Bybit hack, right? Because that, at the very beginning, wasn't social engineering attack on that supplier that Bybit uses for their wallet infrastructure. So also there, the nation state actors are also still leveraging the human to get into the systems. And as we as an industry are still, let's say, relatively young, we have to look at how can we properly secure all of our humans in the whole supply chain, not only our customers, but also our very own people. And that is an intricate thing, because the customer will be targeted via whatever way out there is possible, right? Just think about the usual smishing attacks or vishing attacks where someone is calling you, or you have an SMS saying, hey, this is your customer support. We've seen some strange movements in your account. Please log in and call us and we'll help you. This is the exact same approach that we've seen in banking for years and years and years, and they're now being used in the crypto space as well. So what can we do, of course, right, is awareness methods for our customers. We tell them, hey, don't fall for this. We have security mechanisms in place to protect them while logging into the app, showcasing warning messages when they're supposed to send out their crypto to an external wallet. There are so many things that we can put in place, but really securing then something like that transaction itself is exactly where we also, of course, need to leverage solutions, as Uwe has already pointed out, that actually look at the chain itself, right, and those transactions and where it goes to, and maybe even stop that before it's being executed, right? Because we know, hey, that wallet is very highly suspicious, or is already has been used in the past for malicious purposes. So we can already stop this. There are a couple of providers out there right now that we can actually use for that. And the adoption rate of this is also getting higher and higher, right?
Is it more difficult or more easy to protect from malicious behavior in the crypto space based on the data?
funnily enough, it's actually more easy, right? Because of the base of what the blockchain is all about. It's transparency, right? We know that where transactions are going to. We know the routes they will take. In the standard finance area, when money has been sent to a different account, then most certainly that is gone for nearly forever. There are a couple of initiatives out there to save that, but most certainly you will never see that money again. On the crypto side, again, you can trace it back to wherever it goes and to wherever it leads. So there is more potential to safeguard this to a certain degree.
Sounds like institutions can have a good breath because the cost of serving a single customer doesn't go up even when the honeypot goes up. So I think one person who's built the systems for such institutional-grade transactions to be safe and secure is Dennis Winter. What have you been seeing in terms of the questions that the clients have, the new product innovations? Do you see more skepsis or more openness towards adoption, towards institutional mainstream?
I mean, overall, I would say that the interest in the industry is actually growing. At Börse Stuttgart Digital, we basically provide to institutional partners also the possibility to provide to their end customers the possibility to buy and sell cryptocurrencies, right? Which is just like one specific part of, course, blockchain. But we can definitely see that there is more and more interest coming up in this regard. That said, the whole security topic and the compliance topic just stays relevant for regulated institutions, of course, who are then usually our customers in this regard. So they don't want to gamble with their current situation, their current compliance standards that they have, which basically means we do have to double down on the security and on the regulatory measures that we have in place right before basically transactions go through. Like, I fully agree with what you said, that you, of course, have the transparency and the integrity, which is also what basically the blockchain allows us to have, that we have this integrity of all the changes that went through. Linking this up, though, with the actual players who actually triggered certain transactions is something that is still at the moment unclear to many who are at least contemplating like going into professionally from the business side to really go into this kind of field. Because really making sure that eventually, if things go south, you have measures and means to follow through and to correct a transaction that wasn't actually meant to be this way is something that is still a challenge.
What's the real showstopper? Like, where would the liability also be in such a such a transaction, unapproved transaction?
The liability is usually always with the institution. Like, you can't outsource your risk eventually. So from that perspective, it is always about like heightening your security standards, your security baseline, making sure that you have the full grasp on what is happening and to basically intervene before things go south.
So in general, the backbone of our digital economy is going to be the key security driver. On human side, we learned we need to be more aware. Is there anything on governance or on social side that you see as a capability that is needed to bring our industry to the next level?
Yes, definitely. I think despite the fact that there are some statistics out there where people say, ask the question, okay, how many folks in a specific population have experience with Bitcoin, for instance, or with trade? The numbers are relatively high. However, if you talk to folks, they're saying, yeah, I've done it, but really understanding what's behind it, very low, very low. So, you know, when I was with McKinsey for a few years, I was responsible for our risk management practice. And then our clients asked us, okay, what is the secret sauce, for good risk management in the traditional mainstream regulated banks and insurance companies? And we always said, it's two things. It's creativity, to your point. There are lots of folks out there who are really smart and creative in coming up with scam. And the second was data. In the mainstream industries, data is a very, very scarce resource. So now on blockchain, if you at least look at on-chain data, that data thing is solved. Only partially, I should say, right? Because we have something that is called anonymity. Wallet anonymity. And that's something, if you look at the old world again, the industries and the regulators and the politicians have put a lot of effort into. So identity verification is a big part of what banks today do. Right. And if something goes wrong, that is also something for big banks where they can go belly up Yeah, too many big money laundering scandals also in the traditional financial services industry. So in that sense, I think we can, as you were saying, as the criminals, yeah, apply certain recipes from the past to the new world, I think we can also in the blockchain space apply some of the proven concepts, yeah, that worked to the new blockchain world. Because again, acceptance is in many, many instances also a function of knowledge, trust, confidence. Do I know this? Have I seen it before? Well, then yes, I embark on the journey. Right. If that's all different, it would be very, very difficult to develop blockchain into something that is adopted by the masses and the big industries.
You know, I'm extremely grateful for GND to crafting this platform where we can speak about these topics and inform everyone who is a representative of an organization, and you bring it back to your organizations. I would, before we move on to the decentralized identity panel, so I'm very happy about also the curation of the programming. It touches on all the important topics. I would love to open up our engagement with the audience. If there's any questions, you would love to ask the executive visionary or cyber guardian or institutional bridge builder.
Okay, my name's Yao Shuz. I'm from automotive industry. So, I mean, there are different use cases, could be a blockchain use case for automotive mobility sector. And energy as well, so supply chain management. So I'm very interested because the basic infrastructure is financial, because every digital service needs to be paid, right? So that's my very interested. My question is that you're just talking about security and transparency in blockchain. This is a benefit of blockchain technologies. So how to handle the trade-off between the transparency, security, transparency, and privacy?
So I think when we talk about blockchain as an ecosystem, we have to really look at the intrinsic values that it brings with that technology. Again, it's the transparency, right? It's the proven track record, basically, of having this whole network that agrees on a transaction, for example, right? Because that is what it is. You have this network of nodes that say, yes, I approve this, this is correct. And with that trust, because that is what it's all about, right? It's building confidence and trust into that network, having that agreement with it. Of course, because all of this is traceable, transparency is the highest level of transparency that you can reach. Now, with our approach on privacy, you of course don't always want to have that, right? Because I would like to have my privacy just for me and not shared with the whole world. So you have to very, very clearly identify what kind of business case or what kind of reason you want to have something implemented on the blockchain, so that this point of transparency is not broken because of that, right? I need to be very sure that whatever I want to set up in a blockchain environment is always encompassing that this transparency will be kept. And so that means there will be always the names or always the sender and the receiving ID, whatever, right? So if that still matches with what you want to actually accomplish with that technology, then great. There are potentially a lot of very, very great benefits for that. Go ahead. But if you see that there are certain points that go against these privacy impacts, you're probably on the wrong side of that technology and need to look out for something different. That would be my take.
Thank you so much. Is there another question? Yes, please.
Hello, my name is Ludwig Hohmann. I lead a crypto family office in Asia. I would stay at the topic because you said something, Max again. You said that you really like the transparency of the blockchain. For me, the decentralization of the blockchain is a bigger part why I really like it. And you said you would be a fan of big exchanges being able to block transaction out of the exchange on the basis of the wallet that is the receiver of those funds being blocked. Would that not defeat the decentralization aspect? And would that not be gameable anyways in every aspect today with AI in pretty much minutes?
So when you look at the AI topic here, and I assume you mean with AI the more efficient and way faster way of just having new wallets, right? Or is that the concept that I hear?
Well, you would put labels on wallets, like basically if it would go through a mixer and the wallet got like any funds of that, I could like basically dust all wallets that got like a 5-figure amount of that exchange, and then you would never be able to use that wallet again.
That is potentially true, which is why the analytic companies that are out there already that you can actually implement in your anti-money laundering approach, right? Because that is, in the end, what we do from a crypto company side, the same approach again as the banks do. It's AML, anti-money laundering, anti-financial fraud, right? And so this is a risk-based approach, right? You cannot just say, I don't like that wallet because it appeared somewhere, so I'll block it, but it will get a specific flag or specific risk scoring. And then you as the crypto exchange or whoever basically decide within that process if that risk is now crossing a threshold that you would like to say, I'm stopping this transaction now, because very highly likely this is malicious. This is not really the intent of that original sender. And then I can, of course, go back in and say, hey, are you really sure? Because again, you can also then deliver context. We have seen this. This has been flagged. There are multiple steps on top of that so that you can really safeguard the assets of your customers. And is this breaking the decentralization approach? I would say still no, because the decentralization approach in itself is not limiting us or our customers in saying we will protect your assets, because that is still one of our biggest goals, right? Is to keep the assets of our customers protected so that they don't flow out.
Can I maybe add one or two thoughts to this? I think when it comes to like transaction of values over the blockchain, it boils down for me always to keeping the integrity of all the different components that are involved in that. It's the integrity of the identity. And you don't have to share the identity. You just need to be able at some point to track back who triggered a certain transaction. Like, you need to keep the integrity of the identity. You need to be able to keep the integrity of the actual transactions, so wallet A to wallet B and these things. And to me personally, it doesn't gamble with the decentralization, because this information or this link that you can do towards an identity provider or like basically the verification of the actual transaction is something that you can definitely do part-wise off-chain. And whatever you need for the actual functionality, you can still stay on-chain and ensure with the overall, you know, network that the transaction itself was actually verified through the network. For me, it actually boils down to just breaking the processes up into the different parts that need to be that need to have integrity in this case.
That's a wonderful complementary contribution. I think hearing our different speakers, you can already see that the blockchain industry or the Web3 industry is diverse. And we are developing into a place where different stakeholders with different philosophies and different economic bets are coming in. And this is the beauty, because that's when it's developing into something that could be a mainstream market in a few years to come. I think in the honoring of the time, I would love to invite our panelists to just share one insight that you really want the audience to take away from your fields of work. Please, Uwe.
I think my truth or my insight would be largely a matter of the rules by which a blockchain technology is applied, by which a digital asset market operates. That's where transparency comes into place. Everyone who enters into that market should have full transparency on the rules which he exposes himself to. And there's a lot of talk about the transparency on-chain. I think the transparency off-chain, for those who then operate on chain, is at least as important.
Yes, we live in a world marked of humans as of now. and with agents to come. And what about you, Dennis? What's your concluding takeaway or call to action for the audience?
I'm not entirely sure whether it's a call. Maybe just like sharing this thought that just keeps me busy for quite a while already. I also went from just like Uwe, from I would say like a skepticist at times to someone who is really convinced that the blockchain technology, but also cryptocurrencies are here to stay. That alone, I think we are putting a lot of focus at the moment on cryptocurrencies. I also think that if we are able to step back a bit and really understand the power of the actual technology and this possibility that we can really have a distributed complex system that allows us, what I mentioned earlier, this integrity for like entire processes, it really gives us room to really think about big, about how to integrate certain things. And that's something that just, you know, in the meantime, really keeps me busy every once in a while, and I enjoy the thought.
Thank you for building it too, Max.
I think my key takeaway still for everybody in here is when we look at the topic of blockchain in itself, we had a couple of bumps on the road that we've traveled so far, and COVID was definitely one of the biggest bumps why we didn't evolve with blockchain technology as fast as we would have wished to. But now we're getting that traction back. And if you just look at the market in finance, for example, with MiCAR now in place, the markets in crypto assets regulation. So we're coming up with regulations that are trying to get a grasp on the topic itself, right? And what does that mean? The topic gets acknowledged and accepted widely by the market. That's why we have those regulations now. And so for blockchain in the future, and I think as wonderfully my co-speakers have said as well, we're not there yet, right? Where we will still see a whole lot of new developments happening with blockchain technology. I myself think, especially also in security, there's a whole lot of potential for blockchain as a tool to really secure companies and then people. And so I'm very much looking forward to the future.
Thank you all so much for your wonderful contributions. I am extremely hopeful to be part of this community im Land der Dichter und Denker. And thank you so much, Christiane, for giving us the space. Thank you.
Thank you.
Subscribe now so you never miss an episode. We can't wait to share these exciting conversations with you.